Michael McGimsey, former health minister, with us today. Your reaction to this, Michael? I guess you were predicting this would happen.
It's appalling. It is the human side of a situation where our health service is not properly resourced. We don't have the capacity to deal with demand. But all of that comes down to individual patients. These are people and it's their lives, and they're being seriously and grossly affected. And I think that is the position that we look to address. That's what the health service is there to do. And clearly, in most cases, it is delivering. But at the edges now, we're seeing this crumbling around the edges. And that's a very human side to that crumble that you have on there this morning.
This is the black hole effect of failure to agree budgets, of failure to be able, as a political collective in Northern Ireland, to prioritise citizens, to prioritise money. This is the reality of it now.
I think that's exactly right. We did not prioritise our money properly when we did the budget in 2011. The consequence of that has been that the health service has been running with less money than it needs. That has affected capacity, and there's been a build-up here. And as a result, we're looking now at waiting times in orthopaedics, but not just in orthopaedics, right across a number of specialities. And now it's into, most worryingly, to cancer. And when you're waiting too long in cancer, we know what a consequence can be. Patients are liable to come to harm. So I think, firstly, we need to recognise, Stephen, this morning we have a crisis, and this needs crisis response. And we need the executive to be dealing with this. And there are ways and means it can be dealt with, but this needs urgent action. Otherwise, individuals such as the man...
John O'Hagan, Mr. O'Hagan.
Mr. O'Hagan on this morning. That will be multiplied up and down the country across a number of specialities. And I can tell you, as someone who's had back surgery myself a number of years ago, it is absolutely excruciating to have to bear that. And the galling thing is, of course, that we have the ability to deal with it if we're prepared to give the support to the health service that it should be getting.
I wonder also, because we were looking at this as a programme, Michael, as you probably know, the link between the tap being turned off, and politicians and some members of the public, in fact, some of them don't like the notion of the private sector doing some of the work within the health service. But the private sector have been, you know, they've been talking to this programme saying, look, there's going to be a massive implication if you stop the private sector being able to work on waiting lists, to do some of the operations, to take some of the pressure off the NHS. And it seems that this statement that has come through from the Belfast Trust this morning about this story, you know, yep. from what I can see, the only point they're making in this statement is the fact that the Trust used to benefit from additional funding to purchase procedures from the independent sector, and now they're not.
Well, we have a very small private sector in Northern Ireland compared to other parts of the world, but it plays a crucial role, because the fact is that demand has grown so quickly over the past generation, and capacity in the health service doesn't match it. So therefore, we have to find capacity outside the health service, and the independent sector is one of the ways to do it. And I made no apology for that when I was at health, patients in pain and distress, patients in trouble, it was to find the support for them that they required. And orthopaedics is a particularly challenging speciality. We just simply don't have enough consultant orthopaedic surgeons available to do the work that we require them to do.
And what about these consultants? Is it unfair for some people to wonder and suggest and point the finger at some of these consultants who have plenty of time when they're getting extra money into their pocket to do the private sector, but they don't seem to have more time to do the NHS work?
Well, I think, firstly, they do whatever sessions their contract says, normally 10 or 11 sessions a week. They're doing their 35 or 40-hour week, and that's what they're doing. And that's what they're contracted to do. If they want to do extra, that's a matter for themselves. I always look to have the money that we could employ the consultants within the health service on overtime and so on. But we are in a situation where we don't have that capacity. Let me give you an example. When I went into health in 2007, we needed 1,300 open heart surgery operations a year. We had the capacity to do 1,000. That meant there were 300 patients not being met each year. Now, if you leave those in the waiting list, they come to harm. So we look to get that support outside. And I bought operations in London through the health service, but I also went to Dublin, the Black Rock Clinic, and bought them there because I took the view, yes, it was money that was going out, but these are people's lives. And if I hadn't have done that, people are liable to lose their lives. The situation here in orthopaedics, Mr. O'Hagan, in extreme pain, large numbers of people in pain and distress. You do what you have to do to address those needs. Now, there's a long-term solution, there's a short-term solution, but right now we're in a crisis and we need a crisis response. So I don't worry about where you get the support from, where you buy the service from, where you get that intervention from. But these patients who are in trouble right now, they need action now. We don't have the capacity in the health service to provide that action entirely. Mostly we do, but not entirely. So therefore, we have to think outside.
I wonder who's in charge when Simon Hamilton, the health minister, is on holiday. I wonder who's today responsible, actually.
Well, now, I set up, we had four health boards in Northern Ireland when I was there. I collapsed them into one that's called the Health and Social Care Board, and you're familiar with that.
I certainly
that
am.
That's supposed to be the essential management tool for running the health service.
Well, we'll be chasing them this morning.
They are the ones.
We'll be on the phone to them right now.
What actually happens is that the department gives the money to the Health and Social Care Board to spend to go out and commission services. So many...
Oh, well, there's... There,
so
sorry.
Many hips, so many hearts, etc., etc.
Sorry, Michael. So there we go. The day that this story is breaking, the Health and Social Care Board, no one is available. Like, sometimes you actually couldn't make this up. So you have patients in distress this morning being broadcast around Northern Ireland. You know, I've got people calling me now this morning about their worries, and no one in the Health and Social Care Board is available. Where are they? Are they all on holiday? Are they all in their caravans? What do they mean, no one is available?
It's graceful. I have to say, it is a serious indictment when you consider that this is the board that I set up to manage the health service, that takes the budget, and in terms of health, their budget, there's around over $3 billion flowing through their accounts to disperse to the trusts, to the hospitals, through the GP contracts and so on.
And just to be totally clear, apparently they did give an interview to one of our colleagues in the BBC yesterday, but on the day that a story of this importance to Northern Ireland is actually being published, the Health and Social Care Board decide that nobody is actually at work who can speak to the public. And this is a Health and Social Care Board that is supposed to be reassuring us that they can implement what we need in Northern Ireland.
They are effectively running the health service, delivering on the policy from the minister.
Yeah.
Now, to be fair to them also, the minister needs to show leadership and take a very strong management role. And I would have been with the Health and Social Care Board basically virtually on a weekly basis. And when this sort of thing happened, I had health trust executives in, I had senior people in, and we had robust conversations about what we're going to do about it. I think it's not acceptable that the general public is being kept in the dark about what's happening. The board needs to get out front. They need to be talking to you. They need to be talking about other media outlets as well, explaining this is the situation. We're in a situation that we need to deal with. Here are the steps that we're taking, and benchmark it and need to keep that conversation going. The general public, after all, are paying for all of this through their taxes, and they're entitled to know who's running the show and how they're running it and what they're doing. If you want to know what's wrong with the health service, you ask the doctors, ask the nurses, ask the consultants, the GPs, ask the general public, the patients. And, I mean, you're getting a consensus here right across the board that we have serious, serious issues here. We have crisis developing.
And
therefore, it needs a crisis response.
Look, apparently the Health and Social Care Board are saying that they had planned an interview yesterday because no one is available today. I stress the point again. on a day. I actually want the. We will put in a question after this show this morning as to what the level of funding is for the Health and Social Care Board, as to how many press officers they've got. That in a story of this magnitude, they have people available the day before a story breaks, but they cannot react to a live story and reassure the public this morning from what they are hearing today. Today. On a story like this, where you have elderly people in tears,